This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And wow, what a day. Joe Biden has announced that he's going to run for president. Surprise, surprise, right? But his announcement, it was really rather remarkable. I mean, he is running. I mean, this is the starting point, right? But he's apparently running full out on the platform of that guy in the White House is nuts, and we've got to get him out, and I'm the one who can do it. I mean, he started out his campaign announcement, the rollout. You can see the video. It's all over the internet, and TV is playing it about every 15 minutes, where he just basically comes right out and says, you know, he plays the video of Charlottesville, and the, you know, Jews will not replace us, you will not replace us, and all this kind of stuff, and says, you know, that is not America. And, you know, we're in a battle for the soul of this country. And speaking of the battle for the soul of this guy, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on Joe Biden's candidacy. You know, every time somebody, a major candidate, we did it with Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, every time a major candidate has thrown their hat into the ring, I've asked you, what do you think? 202-808-9925 is our telephone number. You know, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden? Donald Trump welcomed him to the race this morning. He said, "Welcome to the race, Sleepy Joe. I only hope you have the intelligence, long in doubt, to wage a successful primary campaign." This guy's just like classless. You know, I was watching a video from The Daily Show this morning about the selfie stick scandal when President Obama used a selfie stick in the White House, and like a dozen different Fox News commentators talked about how he was bringing disrepute upon the office of the presidency, and no president in history has been so disrespectful. I mean, it was a major scandal over on Fox News, lasted for like a week. he used a selfie stick. And here's Trump, you know, saying, "Well, I don't think you're all that smart." Anyhow, Trump adds, "It'll be nasty. You'll be dealing with people who truly have some sick and demented ideas." Again, this is not the kind of language that a president of the United States should be using to describe a fellow American, much less a fellow politician. It's bizarre. And because of this kind of rhetoric from Donald Trump, yesterday, self-proclaimed Christian activist Dave Daubenmeyer drove 8 hours, that was the day before yesterday he set out, or the 2 days before yesterday, 8 hours from his home in Ohio to Hillary and Bill Clinton's Chappaquiddick, New York home to demand Hillary Clinton's arrest. And on the way, he posted a video asking for Oath Keepers and other militia members to join him, right? Come on, armed people! He called the Clinton home the greatest crime scene in history. Now, why did this guy do this week? Because all this week, Sean Hannity and Donald Trump have been focusing on Hillary Clinton. I mean, they have to have an enemy. Donald Trump can only, and Sean Hannity and Fox News and all these guys, they can only be Superman. They can only be the good guy if they can portray, if they can have, I mean, you know, truly Superman, as opposed to just a good guy. The only way they can be truly Superman is to have a supervillain. And they've spent, you know, 15, 20 years creating this supervillain persona for Hillary Clinton. And they don't want to waste it, right? I mean, who else have they vilified that much? Well, there's Obama, but Obama's keeping quiet. And so Trump tweets about all the crimes committed by crooked Hillary. This was on April 24th. This was yesterday. This guy, Daubenmeyer, who showed up to arrest Hillary, he also posted a video. He's got a YouTube channel, or had one. I'm guessing it's been taken down now, that included a lengthy discussion of how unjust. It's a crime that he can't use the N-word anymore. Right? Seriously. No, I'm not making this up. Seriously. And So anyway, with regard to, but I mentioned Joe Biden, and that's where I started on this. I'm curious to hear your views on Joe Biden's presidency and where it fits in with the others. Also, yesterday was the She the People event. Women of color from all over the country were addressed by, I believe, five, I could be wrong, of the major candidates. Maybe it was seven or eight. And Bernie was kind of, at least according to the news reports, the crowd was unhappy with him, shall we say. Now, I don't know if he's getting the Howard Dean treatment. You'll recall that Howard Dean was on MSNBC with Chris Matthews back in the day. This was the primary for, what, 2008, as I recall? I'm not even sure which year it was. It might have been 2004. But, you know, Howard Dean was a serious contender, and he was the most progressive candidate at the time. And he was way ahead, and he was rolling on, and he says, you know, we're going on to North Dakota and South Dakota and Michigan. Yeah! And, of course, that's not how people in the room heard it. But the media used that to take him down. I mean, the media took him down. And it kind of concerned me when I saw CNN's producers picking these really extremist questions for Bernie. You know, you've spent your life supporting totalitarianism, you know, the socialism like in the Soviet Union, which is just a flat-out lie, right? But they put her on. Bernie, of course, talked back to it. And you know, I mean, there were a couple of them like that. And I thought, you know, if these are just one-offs and this goes away, then I can put my tinfoil hat back in the closet. But if I start seeing that particular clip as bad and out of context as it is, just like Howard Dean's scream, over and over and over in the media, and I saw it this morning on Stephanie Ruhle's show on MSNBC, sure enough, there it is, then this is the media trying to take down Bernie. Which, you know, so let's say they succeed in taking down Bernie. Are they going to try and take down Elizabeth Warren next? I'm guessing yes. If what we're looking at is, you know, giant corporations who own most of our media companies, in the case of MSNBC, it's Comcast, giant corporations saying, you know, we really don't want a progressive as president. The excuse we'll use is we don't think a progressive can beat Trump, which is complete nonsense. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. Anyhow, Joe Biden's positions. He has endorsed a $15 minimum wage. He's endorsed a free four-year public college, by the way. He endorsed that in 2015. Keep in mind, these are Bernie positions, some of these. He said that his free college, in fact, was one of his top five policies to help the middle class. He's in favor of more progressive tax reform, more, in other words, higher taxes on rich people, more worker protections, major infrastructure investments, and incentives for investors to spend outside of major cities. He has called for a ban on non-compete agreements, which about half of American workers now have, that prevents them from going to work for other people in the same industry for a certain number of years. He asked, why are we giving hedge fund millionaires tax breaks but can't find the money to give families a real tax break for childcare? With regard to health care, we don't really know what his position is other than that he supports, he said health care should be a right for all and not a privilege for the few. That's kind of Bernie language, but we don't know what the details are. On climate change, he introduced the Senate's, this by the way is from Maggie Astor's piece in today's New York Times, he introduced the Senate's first climate change bill in 1986. So he's been on this theme for some time. I mean, that was 30 years ago. He kept the United States in the Paris Agreements, or he would keep the United States in the Paris Agreement. He was the vice president when we joined the Paris Agreement. But his full climate change platform, we don't know the details yet. With regard to abortion, he's been back and forth and back and forth on this. You know, we'll see where it ends up. In 1981, he even had an amendment to ban foreign aid for abortion-related biomedical research. But earlier this year, his aides would not say whether he still supports these policies. And on criminal justice, he said, you know, for example, the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1988, he said, I haven't always been right. So he's kind of walked back his own positions on a lot of these things. So, oh, and one last thing that I would like to note. Last week was Holy Week, right? And celebrating the resurrection, memorializing the execution, the crucifixion of Jesus. And so it's probably appropriate that Muhammad bone saw man, Mohammed bin Salman, Jared Kushner's best friend in the Middle East, staged 37 executions in a single day, including a crucifixion. One of the people arrested was a student who was, he was arrested at the airport on his way to Michigan. He was 17 years old. He was on his way to go to college at Western Michigan University. He has been held for 7 years before he was beheaded. Why? He took part in a public protest. Three of those executed were arrested as minors. The youngest was 16. And according to CNN, quote, one was crucified as a deterrent to others. Jared Kushner, of course, used his security clearance to provide the Saudi dictator, Mohammed, you know, bone saw man, to provide him with the names of suspected enemies. How many people whom Kushner turned over have been beheaded or crucified isn't clear. I think that this is something that Congress should be looking into. If you're going to use your investigative powers to find out what's going on, one of the most important things, I think, would be to find out what national security information did Jared Kushner give to Mohammed bin Salman, and how did he use it? I think that's actually a very, very big deal. And then, once again, with regard to the Trump campaign, the NRA has been busted using a series of shell companies. The NRA gave 9,259 times the legal limit to the Trump campaign, along with a bunch of other Republicans. But we're looking at, you know, flat-out, blatant, obvious, illegal campaign finance stuff. And now the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, is being sued. This was a day before yesterday, actually. The lawsuit was handed down. Is being sued for refusing to enforce the law, for not going after the NRA. So, you know, we live in strange times. And we'll see how all this will shake out. We have a guy in the White House who is just basically committed to not only not enforcing the law, but to making things worse. We'll be back. I also want to get into a discussion of impeachment right after this. Stick around. It's 18 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your thoughts on the Biden candidacy right after this. And welcome back. Debbie watching Free Speech TV in Denver. Hey, Debbie, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was thinking about with Joe Biden and all of our candidates. Number one, my main question is, who are they getting their money from? We talk about how much money they get, but to me it's much more important to know who they're getting their money from, because that's who they're going to be obligated to.
Right.
And number two, if I recall, when Bernie was running against Hillary, didn't all the polls show that Bernie would have beaten Trump over Hillary?
Yes.
Or am I remembering that incorrectly?
No. The polling was quite clear that Bernie would have beaten Trump. But the polling was also clear that Hillary would have beaten Trump. And in fact, she beat him by 3 million votes.
Correct. Well, I just wanted to point out those things, and I wanted to find out if I remembered correctly about the polls or not.
Yeah, you did. So, thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks. Good talking to you. Don in Culver City, California, listening to KPFK. Hey, Don, what's on your mind?
All right, Tom. Joe Biden, if he went back to his working class roots and instincts, I think he'd be a really good president, but it's pretty pretty questionable.
I think why? Why? This is that kind of a moment, you know, when Franklin Roosevelt came into the White House. He was under indictment for bribing a federal state judge in New York. I mean, you know, he had been the head of the, you know, one of the most corrupt political organizations in America, the New York political machine, and you know, he rose to the occasion. I mean, it took the prodding of his wife and of Francis Perkins, his Secretary of Labor, to do it. But you know, in fact, Francis Perkins mostly wrote the New Deal, but he was willing to do it.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I wish that he would, but I'm just saying I'm not sure that he would rise to the occasion, but he might. He remembers the days back when we actually had a social contract between management and labor before Reagan blew it all up.
Right.
Yeah, and that. But whether he would actually do that because so much has changed since then is another question. But anyway, he'd be like Joan of Arc compared to Trump. But I think my first preference would probably be Bernie or Elizabeth or someone who's more focused upon a real solid progressive agenda that would bring about the inequity that correct the inequity that's going on in money and power. This is what the biggest players care about is money and power.
Yes,
and they use these fringe issues. Well, they're mostly sex based issues on the left and on the right to as bones to manipulate people. To scare them to not vote for the other side, whether it's abortion on the right side or sexual identity politics on the left. And I'm an evangelical. That's my kind of bottom line, even though I don't relate to them very well anymore. But I'm kind of a social moderate. I'm not a social conservative by any means. And I know one thing, though, that the average family out there in America, they are scared to death of their teenager going to school every day and perhaps having someone try to recruit them to a lifestyle that they will regret down the road. That's how they see it. And so,
a lifestyle? Are you talking about being gay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like being gay is not a lifestyle, Don. Being gay is how you are. I mean, step into the 21st century. We'll be back. It's 22 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Greenpeace, their campaign specialist, said we're excited to watch, in response to Joe Biden jumping in, we're excited to watch this growing pool of candidates debate the best way to overcome the fossil fuel industry's stranglehold on our politics to tackle the climate crisis. Consensus is already building. To begin with, more than one 2020 frontrunner has pledged to ban new oil, gas, and coal leasing on public lands. Joe Biden has some catching up to do if he wants to show voters he'll be championing for confronting the fossil fuel industry. Joe will have to prove it if he wants the climate vote. And we hope to see that from Joe Biden and every serious candidate in the coming weeks. So it's just, it's basically just a request. Hey, what do you think? Mike in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I am glad about Joe getting in. I obviously think another person can't hurt the party, can only help. But I do have a question. Maybe you know the legal answer to this. Why haven't the House Dems, and specifically Richard Neal, charged Mnuchin and Charles Rettig with obstruction or bare minimum impeding a congressional investigation for not turning over Trump's taxes?
I'm guessing that they want to make it so irrefutable, so undeniable, that that's exactly what's going on, that when they do charge them, it will not be a process that will be lengthy or drawn out, and the conclusion will be foregone. The problem that they're facing, and this is something that, to the best of my knowledge, has not been faced in the past by any member of the House or Senate in the history of the country, is that the president runs the Justice Department. And, the Bill Barr reports to Donald Trump. Bill Barr runs the Justice Department. If the Senate or the House, well, in this case, it would be the House, if for example, Mnuchin continues to refuse to turn the tax returns, Trump's tax returns, over to the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, even though the law says that the IRS shall turn over those returns when they're requested by that particular chair of that particular committee, it's explicit, it's clear, it's obvious, this is not in dispute, it's not even disputable. Richard Neal? No, the chairman's name? Yeah.
Oh, Charles Getter, Getting.
No, I'm talking about the chairman of the committee.
Oh, Richard Neal.
Yeah, Richard Neal. Yeah.
House and Ways.
Yeah, if Richard Neal was to issue an arrest warrant or was to ask for was to submit an arrest warrant, he would have to submit it to William Barr. He would have to submit it to the Justice Department. And then the Justice Department would ask somebody from, whatever appropriate police agency that they have to go out and arrest this guy and bring him, bring him to Congress or put him in jail and hold him in contempt. And we don't know yet if William Barr will enforce those things, you know, if he will enforce an arrest warrant. And I think the assumption is that he will not. Trump certainly will order him not to. And if he doesn't, then it goes to the Supreme Court immediately, because it's a battle between two branches of government, and that can only be resolved by the Supreme Court.
But now here's another question.
And that could take a year and a half or 2 years. That could, you know, and that's what Trump is counting on, by the way, that he can run this thing out past the election.
But now, what if if Richard Neal said, look, we're going to give you till May the 9th. This is the third and final time. If you do not comply, then we're going to move forward with, so they give him enough heads up, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, what they're trying to do right now is establish clearly that, you know, they're playing by the rules and Trump is not. But the thing is, the guy who enforces the rules is Trump. It's the executive branch. It's the Article II branch. That's where all the police power is concentrated. And so if Congress issues arrest warrants and Bill Barr refuses to execute them, Congress is in a big bind. Mike, thanks for the call.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I've been talking about this on this program for months now, and it's only starting to break through in the media how obstructive Bill Barr could be. Well, it may be... It may be a strength to have a well-funded campaign. It may also be a liability. The headline over at Common Dreams right now: hours after entering 2020 race, Biden to attend big money fundraiser hosted by Comcast and Blue Cross executives. Well, you know, I'm guessing he's not going to take the pledge, as it were. But, you know, you're going up against Donald Trump. Is this what it's going to take to win? I think not. I think that it's a mistake. But, you know, I've been proven wrong before. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. Brian in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You sort of already covered some of what I was wanting to get your thoughts on the last call. But it's in terms of Donald Trump saying that he's just going to take impeachment to the Supreme Court, which I understand and you understand is currently not a thing.
Right.
But if Donald Trump just says, no, I'm not doing that. Oh, I'm impeached, which he will never get impeached by the Senate. But even if he were, he's just like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not leaving office. Then short of police dragging him out in cuffs, which we know will never happen, and even that would go to a court case, which would eventually go to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is controlled by him. So people saying that he can't, like, not be impeached because he's going to sue or whatever, he can if the powers that be aren't willing to hold him accountable, and they're not.
This is where John Roberts might end up being the guy who saves the Republic. I mean, we'll see. John Roberts certainly wasn't willing this week to be the guy who saved workers, right? Workers were suing for the right to have class action arbitration. You know, to have a whole bunch of workers in a company be able to take their employer to court. And in a 5-4 decision this week, all five right-wingers, including John Roberts, said, no, workers can't do that. Screw you, workers. You know, if you want to challenge your employers, get a union. Oh, by the way, we're not going to help you get unions either. But on the other hand, you know, I think that John Roberts is increasingly concerned about the history being written about the, quote, Roberts Court. His name is going to be attached to this court for, you know, all time, basically. And if it were to come to Trump actually losing an impeachment vote and refusing to leave office, I'm guessing John Roberts would not be on his side.
I would hope so. But holding my, you know, putting my faith in this country continuing as is, not as is the last 2 years, but as is for 200 plus years,
right,
in John Roberts, is like, I feel like I just want to give up.
I know, it's a very thin read, but do not give up. Do not give up, and don't feel like that. It's like, we need to go forward with this. Brian, thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you. Beth in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Beth, what's up?
Hi, I wanted to talk about the impeachment question. I heard, is it Richard Painter today, talking about how if we're starting hearings, we should put an end date on that hearing and then say, as you know, after 6 weeks or whatever, we're going to hold a vote. He feels that there's enough evidence already out, even if people don't show up to testify, but he feels that there is enough evidence to go ahead and impeach anyway, which I think a lot of us do. But I thought that was a really good way out of this concern about just holding hearings and it not leading to anything and people saying, oh, it's the Democrats just, you know, dilly-dallying again. But yeah. What do you think about that?
I think that frankly, I think that the House, and I think that they will within the next month or so. You know, there's a few things that they're doing right now to establish that they're trying to investigate the president and the White House. And the president and Trump, of course, is saying no to everything and is becoming the obstructor in chief. And at a certain point, they're going to need more, essentially, power. And creating an impeachment inquiry gives them that kind of power. What happened, and Hillary Clinton pointed this out in her Washington Post op-ed, although I've been saying this for weeks now, essentially the same thing. What she pointed out, and it was a piece of nuance, actually, that I was not all that familiar with. What she pointed out was that back in 74, the Senate Judiciary Committee, which, you know, would try an impeachment, the Senate Judiciary Committee was investigating Richard Nixon for months and finally reached the point where it was obvious that Nixon was going to get impeached. And that's when he resigned. On the other hand, in 1988, when Newt Gingrich was leading the impeachment in the House, as soon as the Ken Starr report in all its pornographic glory came down and the Attorney General released everything, including all the grand jury testimony, and nothing was redacted, as soon as that happened, Newt Gingrich called the impeachment vote, held the vote, threw it to the Senate. And it didn't work in the Senate because they hadn't taken the time to build the case for the American people that what Clinton did was impeachable. I mean, you know, what he did was he lied about having an affair, and he didn't even consummate the affair by his own definitions of sex at the time, and those of many Americans, I suppose. And so it was just like it was a non-event. And what she is saying in the Washington Post, and what I've been saying, is these hearings will either swing public opinion or they won't. And if they swing public opinion in a substantial way so that you get more than half of Americans saying, yes, Trump should be impeached, then you're going to start seeing Republicans falling like dominoes, because I think probably most of the Republicans in the Senate would like to see Trump out of there. They view him as a serious problem for the Republican Party, both short and long term. But they're terrified of him. But, you know, and it's the old Shakespearean notion of, you know, if you're going to kill the king, be sure that you, or if you're going to try to kill the king, be sure that you do, because if you don't, you will be the next one who gets crucified. And literally, kill the king is probably a terrible metaphor because, you know, it involves killing. But you get my point. If these Republican senators, they know that if they vote against Trump and they don't take him out, he's gonna wreak revenge on them like he did with Bob Corker and Jeff Flake. And they're all scared to death of that. So I think that having the hearings, labeling them impeachment hearings sometime in the next month or two, which causes the Judiciary Committee to acquire a whole brand new set of powers that the House of Representatives typically does not have, powers that are reserved for the third Article III branch of government, the judiciary, a supercharged subpoena power, things like that. I think that that's the way that you convince the American people that this would work.
I see all that. I'm just really concerned about this business of drawing it out and their complete refusal to follow the law in establishing the investigation.
I get all that, Beth, but let me just toss something in here. If this whole process plays itself out in the next 6 months, there will still be an entire year before the election for Donald Trump and the American people to put behind them the unsuccessful impeachment hearings. If that's what happens, and it will be as if it never happened. If they can basically drag this thing out, if the Democrats in the House, with small measures, can drag this out for 5 or 6 months, and then open the impeachment hearings around the time of the Republican convention, next spring. No, seriously, yeah, and open the impeachment hearings.
Great.
Then those serious impeachment hearings will bring in the witnesses that will bring down the vote for Trump. I mean, it's just like the same way that, James Comey you know, dropped the story that he was investigating Hillary's emails. Oh, we found more emails on Anthony Weiner's computer. And, you know, that cost her 3 points in the public opinion polls overnight. And she never recovered from that. I mean, that was just a few weeks before the election. So the extent to which a lot of this can be done next year or late this year, but in particular next year, is the extent to which it'll actually influence the election. Stuff happening right now, by and large, is not going to influence the election. So unless they really think that they can impeach him, and remove him from office, unless they really think that they've got the Republican votes, which they don't, and they know they don't, then it would be you know, a very dangerous thing to be doing. And
well, certainly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's certainly without Republican votes and. On the basis of public opinion, you're right. It's just fascinating because I came into this, you know, I thinking, boy, that's the answer.
Yeah.
And now I'm hearing a good case for prolonging it, which I never expected.
Yeah. It's the political case actually is a very, very strong case for dragging this thing out for 5-6 months, and that may be Nancy Pelosi's game plan. I have no idea. The legal case, you know, which is what we're all focusing on and everybody's looking at, is like, you know, right now, If Barack Obama had committed $250,000 campaign fraud that by and large caused him to get elected and caused John McCain to lose an election, you can bet that the Republicans would have impeached Barack Obama. And that's what Trump did with paying off Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. So, and that's probably the least of his crimes, right? But that's the one that everybody knows that's already been through a judicial process, that Michael Cohen is going to prison for writing the check that Donald Trump ordered him to write. And so, you know, there's crimes just kind of laying around on the ground. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
But the question is, what's the best time to present them? And, you know, I'm guessing that Nancy Pelosi is a wiser head than I. She has certainly been doing this a lot longer than I have, generally speaking, her judgment, I think, has always been proven, by and large, has been proven to be right. Beth, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah. You were talking about issues for Biden. What he may run on, and one of the issues I feel that would really get him, put almost 2 feet in the White House, and that's ending trickle down voodoo regular economics.
Amen.
For nearly 40 years now we've been under this trickle down economy, and I thought Obama would do it, but he didn't. So that was one of my greatest disappointments. That he didn't end trickle down and say we're going to come from the bottom and out the middle. And if Biden does that or any one of those, gets trickle down, starts talking about trickle down economics.
Yeah. And this is something that the Republicans started. This was Ronald Reagan's thing. And both of our Democratic presidents since Reagan have just kind of gone along with, and it's something that Donald Trump, by the way, promised to blow up, remember, as did Bernie Sanders. Maine, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think it's fairly obvious if Donald Trump can get elected on a platform of blowing up neoliberalism, even though he was lying through his teeth, so can a Democrat. And welcome back, Carrie in Chicago. Hey, Carrie, you have some thoughts on Joe Biden?
In a roundabout kind of way. I am rereading Malcolm Nance's Plot to Hack America in light of the Mueller report, which basically confirms everything Malcolm had to say.
Right.
And, you know, it's pretty scary to me. And all this, you know, I love all these 20 candidates that we have, the slate that we have. I would support any of them.
Yep.
And
me
I'm
too.
Not inclined to bash a single one of them.
Yep, me too.
And I'm fighting people on both sides of that who are insistent upon bashing our nominees or potential nominees. And I just think that's a terrible mistake given, this is really scary what's going on with Putin.
Yeah. I agree. That's why, you know, when the top news story over on Common Dreams was Joe Biden's holding a high-end fundraiser with, you know, executives from big companies, I was like, you know, right now we're living in a world where Citizens United is the law of the land, and if that's what it's going to take to win an election, it's unfortunate, but it's a reality. On the other hand, you know, you've got other candidates like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders who are saying, no, I'm not taking corporate PAC money, I'm not taking big money. Apparently Pete Buttigieg is taking lobbyist money. I don't know, but, you know, we'll see. I guess that's the only thing I can say. You know, it's going to be...
Well, let's get rid of the current threat,
yeah,
which is real.
Yes, and then deal with the larger, more systemic things. Yeah, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think it's really important to report it, but it's also really important, I think, not to use it as a weapon against, in this case, Joe Biden. Kerry, thanks for the call. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Good morning there. You know, I have to agree we have to move forward at some point with the impeachment investigation and all it's going to do. But with this CNN town hall the other night, I didn't watch it, but, you know, I heard your recap the other day of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing which all of a sudden it dawned on me, CNN, they hired a person by the name of Sarah Isgur. This is back in mid-February.
Right.
And she was a member of the Trump administration, and she's going to be the new political director and oversee 2020 election coverage.
Yeah, and there was about 2 weeks of massive blowback, and they unhired her or demoted her. She's no longer in charge of the election coverage. I don't know what role she is playing. If she's some... Say what? She's the Facebook's new lawyer? Oh, okay. So she went off. Shira has been following this. Apparently, this woman has gone off to be a lawyer for Facebook. So she's not working for CNN anymore, Steve.
Okay, interesting.
I knew that she had been either demoted or moved or whatever, because, you know, we reported on that on this program. I didn't realize that she's gone to Facebook. But hey, you know, Facebook just did a strategic deal with the Daily Caller. You know, this right wing website that I think is owned by Tucker Carlson. To help them figure out where the nasty trolls are, you know, those liberal trolls.
Oh yeah, really nice. You know, one thing, you know, I'm thinking about here, you know, if some of Bernie's questions were kind of Willie Hortonized.
Yeah. Exactly.
The what's sad about this is, you know, the average Dunsky out there, you know, they don't realize that, you know, about the socialism meme. They don't realize, you know, the public schools, public roads, Medicare, Social Security, court system, fire department, police, the military, on and on. It's we're already quite socialized.
Yeah, those are all socialist programs. Absolutely, Steve. But you're absolutely right. Also, the average American doesn't know that. And as I said yesterday, this will only be an issue for the Democratic Party in a real way if Bernie is the nominee. If Bernie's not the nominee, I think they'll be able to you know, change the subject.
Stop.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, William in Marengouin, Louisiana. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, William. How do you say your town?
Hey, Tom, about what you had reported about Comcast, you know, and I'm okay with any of our Democrats. You know, it's just time to get a Democrat in.
Yeah.
But it is concerning that, you know, MSNBC made Trump and MSNBC seeking take it away from somebody we prefer and make it a Trump Biden show. You know,
well, I think this is MSNBC playing footage from a setup that CNN included in their town halls that they were obviously so embarrassed by that after they did it to Bernie, the subsequent hosts felt a need to ask variations on the same question of subsequent candidates, which was pretty pathetic and embarrassing, I would think. But it's obvious what they were trying to do. They were trying to have the Michael Dukakis moment. And, you know, some people in the media think that they actually had that.
Yeah, but thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, William. Good to hear from you. Jared in Downington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Oh, hello, Tom. Oh, did you know that I actually did an Ancestry.com, and you and I may actually be somewhat related.
Okay.
Because you are from Norway, correct?
My father's father and mother were from Norway.
Well, it said on my Ancestry.com, I am 10% Norwegian.
Ah, uh-huh. Well,
then
okay.
And then it's 10,
there's a chance.
10%, had 10% French, and then the rest would be Scottish, British, and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Norman, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. So anyway, but my real topic I want to talk about is Biden. when you said that Biden would be that he could be our new FDR.
This is the extreme end of hopeful thinking, Jared. I mean, which is basically all I've got right now. I mean, it's like, but I don't think that politicians typically, I mean, Bernie's probably the exception to this, but politicians typically don't hold a position for 40 years and absolutely say, this is it, this is where I put my flag in the ground and I'm not moving. Politicians change with the times. Joe Biden's position on gay marriage, for example, he was ahead of Barack Obama on that, and he dragged Obama into it as an example. I'm perfectly willing to cut him some slack and say he can change. And FDR was in many ways a very progressive politician when he was the governor of New York. But he was not the FDR that was in the White House.
Yeah. But there was also social movements at the time. And
you're
a
right.
lot of people want to forget this in the history books, but the Communist Party of America was huge at the time. Now, it wasn't the same as labor movements in other places like Great Britain or Germany or France that had like real labor parties, because the Democratic Party really isn't a party per se. It's a coalition of various factions.
Right, so is the Republican Party nowadays. But you're making my point, Jared. If you look at the time before the crash of 1929, when Roosevelt, I'm pretty sure, was governor of New York, he was not. There was not a social, I mean, there was a social movement, a progressive social movement, but it was very much on the fringe and was being actively persecuted and prosecuted by the United States government. After the crash of 1929, that social movement on the left, and there was one on the right as well, by the way, the Nazis were rising as well between 1929 and 1932 or 33. You had the rise of the fascists, and you had the rise of the genuine communists, the not just Marxist, but Stalinists essentially. Although Stalin wasn't in power by that point, or maybe he was.
He was.
Yeah. Okay.
He was.
So you had the actual Stalinists, and so the positions that FDR was taking as governor were much more moderate and mainstream, sort of Joe Bidenized, compared to the positions that he took after the Great Crash. And I think that there, I wrote a book about this, The Crash of 2016, in which I suggested that it takes a dramatic event, like the Great Depression, to cause the entire country's politics to really radically shift. Those are the things that produce these momentous changes, that social changes, social dynamics. And I would argue that the Trump presidency right now is increasingly being viewed as our version of the Great Depression. I thought it was going to take a giant financial crash to bring things down. I'd say the Trump president is doing it, and I think that Donald Trump has radicalized Joe Biden.
I don't agree with you per se, because I don't see the movements. I still don't see the move. I see the makings of a movement.
There were more people in the streets protesting Donald Trump's inauguration than any other event in the history of the world. Tell me something's not happening, Jared.
But what were they protesting?
They were protesting Donald Trump's inauguration. Donald Trump becoming president, knowing what we knew about him then, without the Mueller report and without knowing that he and Michael Cohen conspired to steal the election by paying off Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels and all that other stuff, just knowing what we knew about him then, the day after he was inaugurated, more people were in the streets than ever before in the history of the human race, including the previous absolute peak of that was when George Herbert Walker or George W. Bush wanted to invade Iraq. So, I mean, it's like, I really think that we are in one of those pivot point moments. The question is, will the Democratic politicians rise to it? And to what level do they have to rise to be actually successful? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's coming. Jared, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's coming up at the top of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.